This is Stories of Win, where we showcase amazing women in neuroscience. We chat with them about their research, their unique journeys through academia, and what drives their passion for studying the brain. Here is one of their stories.
Hi, everyone. I'm Rianne from Stories of Win, and today I'm interviewing Dr. Lillian Brady. She is an assistant professor at the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neurobiology in the Hirsing School of Medicine at University of Alabama at Birmingham. Hi, Lillian. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. I think we both mentioned we have a bit of snow today, so we're enjoying kind of the relaxing mood that that brings.
Yes.
Cool. Well, I'll have us get started. We kind of usually start the interview by saying, you know, what made you really get interested in neuroscience and how you kind of got interested in also doing research?
Yeah, so I'll say my interest in research started before my interest in neuroscience. So a little backstory. I grew up in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. So until I was about 13. If you're familiar with the area, that's where the Department of Energy, there's a location there. It's where parts of the atomic bomb were built. So
wow.
It's a very sciencey town. Like a lot of people like in the town, like their parents worked at the plant or something like that, that was there. So that's where I've kind of got introduced to science as an option, I guess. And I was like kind of, I guess, decent in like my math and science classes then. Then we moved to Jackson, Mississippi in like 2000. So I was like 13 at the time. Mm-hmm. I participated in this program at my high school called Base Pair. So it paired students, like high school students at Murrah High School with the University of Mississippi Medical Center, which was like right across the street, paired high school students with a faculty member there where we could do research. So that was like
cool.
In my junior and senior year. So that's where I was like, okay, so like research is a thing. Like that's cool.
Yeah.
And you know, like as a high school student, you get like the last two periods where you can go like off campus. So it was like, I thought that was fun. But that's kind of like where I got my first introduction to research. And then I went to Alcorn State University in Mississippi. It's an HBCU, like Southwest Mississippi. And I was a chemistry major there. And like as a part of the chemistry department, we didn't have a lot. Well, just the school in general didn't have a lot of like on-campus research opportunities. Mm-hmm. So as a part of the chemistry department, you know, we had to do summer internships.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a summer internship literally every summer
wow.
A student at Alcorn. My first one was on campus where we we got the basics in research, like pipetting, making solutions, like all that type of stuff, which was really good. And then like the next few summers, I went to Indiana University, Purdue University, and then Indianapolis, IUPUI, and I did summer research there. They were all like completely like different. Some were, they were all biomedical research, but it was all like cancer or like, you know, some type of thing. I was really trying to, if I'm being real, you know, like as a undergrad, I'm like, it pays me. I can do some cool things. Like I get to go away for the summer. So that's kind of like what I did.
Yeah, those are good reasons.
Okay. And then after... Oh, so all this time, like I was pre-med and like, you know, I'm a horrible test taker. So I did terrible on the MCAT. I took it twice. And then I was like graduating and I'm like, okay, I'm not in med school. Like, so what am I going to do? So the summer after my senior year, I did an internship. It was kind of like environmental research at a plant in Mississippi. It's the Engineering Research and Development Center, but we called it like waterways because they did a lot of like research with like water and, you know, environment. So I did that after my senior year. And then one day I just went back to Alcorn because it was like not far from my undergrad and was just kind of like walking around, like, you know, summer day, just trying to see what's going on. And I ran into a professor that was starting a Master of Science in Biotechnology program. That they needed students to kind of like get that program off the ground. I'm like, you know, well, I ain't doing nothing. And, you know, he was like, you know, asking what I was doing. So I was like, you know, I need something to do. So he was like, well, we need students for this master's program. Like, will you be in it? And I'm like, that's cool. You know, if you pay for it, I'll do it. So, you know, I ended up getting a master's degree at Alcorn to a master's of science in biotechnology. And I was like one of the first two students in that program. So that was cool.
Wow.
And I got that in 2011. And then during that process, I did another summer internship with the USDA.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like a lot of I had a lot of different research experiences that were like not neuro related at all. I really didn't know neuro was a thing, honestly, until I came to UAB. So I went to UAB for my PhD. And I was a part of the Cell Molecular and Developmental Biology program. And so UAB has like different themes, I guess. So there's like neuro, there's cell, there's like cancer, blah, blah, blah. So as a part of CMDB, like you could really do research in any field because most of all biomedical research involves some type of cell or molecule or whatever. So I chose, you're in graduate school. So, you know, like people tell you, like you choose your rotations, how you kind of want to, like what you want to do. So like your second and third rotation is really like more so like the ones that you're like, not that you don't take them all seriously, but like your second and third rotation is like I want to really join this lab. So my second rotation was like a cancer biology lab, which was similar in theory to like what I did for my master's degree. So I was like, maybe like, I'm going to really do that one. And then I had to find a lab for my first rotation. My first rotation was in like a neuroscience lab.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, I kind of like this. Like, like, this is cool. So then my third rotation was also in a neuroscience lab, but like I mentioned earlier, like I'm not really good at tests. So like I had to retake some of my first year classes, like as a graduate student. And so with that, like the lab that I wanted to join, the PI was kind of newer and she wanted students that would be in the lab a little more.
Mm.
I didn't end up joining that lab. She didn't want me in that lab because I had to retake some classes, which, you know, she just know, but
yeah, her loss.
Okay. So I ended up doing a fourth rotation. And at that point, like I knew I wanted to do neuroscience.
Mm.
And then I joined the lab that I joined, which was in a neurobiology department. And that was it. Like I started learning electrophysiology and I was like, this is the thing. This is what I want to do. So I like it. So that's kind of, I got introduced to neuro like in my first year of my PhD program. And so like my PhD lab was like looking at synaptic transmission in the hippocampus. So learning and memory in the context of like schizophrenia and autism. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was cool. And yeah.
How did you model like schizophrenia, or was it looking at kind of like related mechanisms? How did that kind of work in your guys' lab?
Yeah. So it was kind of looking at mechanisms. One thing that the lab, it was like a strictly EFIS lab, you know, like everybody did EFIS, right? So one thing that I was interested in was like how medications affect like the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up, we had like my family had like a family friend who was like my brother's roommate at some point when he was in college. And that friend was diagnosed with schizophrenia later on. And then like kind of hearing stories from my brother, he was talking about how like his behavior, how it was different like before and after he was diagnosed and while taking medication and not and stuff. So that kind of like always interested me.
Yeah.
So then I joined this lab and we're looking at like synaptic transmission in the hippocampus. I got interested in like medications that affect the dopamine system and how, so that's kind of like what my project was on, was looking at how like haloperidol and other types of antipsychotics, how that affected synaptic transmission and learning and memory and like, we had this mouse model that modeled aspects of schizophrenia and autism. So that was kind of like how I got interested in that.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, that led to me like wanting to do more like dopamine related things in my postdoc. You know, I am a professor now, but I did not want to be in academia.
Yeah. How did that kind of shape from like your graduate experience? What was that like? What did you kind of see throughout grad school that made you want to continue and do a postdoc?
Like, you know, grad school is kind of like, it's a necessary evil, I guess.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, you know, my grad PI, she was great, but she was very hands-off. So, mm-hmm. like, a lot of self-teaching that went along with that, which is fine. And at that time, I liked that. Like, I kind of wanted to just be like, let me be, you know, I'll come if I have a question, but I like, you know, I like my space.
Yeah.
But then in my postdoc, I wanted something a little more hands-on. So like mm-hmm. I was a part of this group at UAB called the Roadmap Scholars, underrepresented neuroscience graduate students, basically, at UAB. So we kind of had that community in that space. And so as a part of that program, there was an event, I guess, a meeting, called the postdoc school. So I was like, you know, the lady over the program, Farah Lubin, Dr. Farah Lubin, she was like really trying to convince me to do a postdoc. And I was like, I don't know. So I did this like postdoc school. And I was like, I mean, I'll give it a try. But at that point, I'm just like, I was over it. Like, the whole thing. So I applied for, because of that, like, program we did at postdoc school, I applied to this program at Vanderbilt called the Academic Pathways Program.
Cool.
So I was like, okay, if I apply and I get in, then I'm gonna go that way. If I don't, you know, then I'm gonna figure something else out. I really kind of been like, go with the flow type of person.
Yeah.
I applied and I got in. I was like, okay, well, I guess we're gonna do that. So
that's cool.
That's how I ended up at Vanderbilt as a part of academic pathways like program.
That's amazing. Did you? I'm familiar with Dr. Lubin's work. Was she someone who like was kind of a mentor to you at grad school, or how did you feel like you had mentorship? Maybe in also your main PI, but also in other people at grad school that kind of helped you push forward, like you said.
Yeah. A lot of people say like representation matters. Dr. Lubin and like Dr. Michelle Gray were really like the only Black women neuroscientists at UAB. Like most of there's a lot of women representation at mm-hmm. UAB, but it was just like good to see like Black women like.
Yeah.
So that kind of like gave me the inherent idea, like, okay, I could do this, you know, like if I wanted to.
Yeah.
That was cool. But I've always had like my mentor at UAB was a woman. Like this, most of the people on my committee were women, like, you know, I just always had women representation. But as a part of that Roadmap Scholars, like I had Farah to go to, Dr. Lubin to go to, and like, you know, bounce ideas off of, or just, you know, be a listening ear, that type of thing. So it's been cool. And she was helpful in getting me back to UAB as well. So
that's amazing. It's good to have a mentor that's with you like throughout your career.
Yeah.
So you kind of you found your interest in dopamine through graduate work, and you had, you know, programs, training programs and mentors that kind of helped keep you along this academic path, even though you weren't necessarily certain if you wanted to stay, but you were like, I still am interested and I have this dopamine curiosity. And so you found yourself at Vanderbilt. And so what kind of happened from there? And what had you stay on course also for academia?
Yeah, so when I started at Vanderbilt, I was in a completely different lab from how I ended. So I was in a lab that was more like biochemistry and dopamine receptor based, which was cool. But like I mentioned earlier, like I wanted someone that was a little more hands-on. Yeah. So that I was like, full professor and not really there lot. So that really wasn't great. And it was just a lot of things that happened that first year that, you know, almost made me really want to quit, you know, to be honest. Yeah,
of course.
Yeah. And I don't know if you're on, well, I know you're on like science Twitter or whatever, but it was just a lot at that time with Vanderbilt specifically.
Yeah.
But the person, unfortunately, that was chair at the time was got into some mess, whatever. But he was also the chair in my department at UAB too. So I kind of like I knew him. And he did help me get out of that lab and like switch to another lab. But it was just it was a lot of tea, a lot of mess.
In that yeah. No, I do remember. I do know what you're. Well, I mean, that's honestly. That's really hard to be able to like, you know, feel, especially after your first year in your first year of your postdoc, like, I'm not happy. I don't know what I want to do. And to instead of leaving, decide to switch labs is like, honestly, like a really big sign of your resilience. So really hard to stick through that. I guess like, how did you kind of know that you were like, you know, I just need to switch a lab. I think it's a fit thing versus like, no, I'm going to leave academia. Like, what was that kind of decision like?
It's really a testament to like the training programs that I was in. So like that academic pathways program, it set us up with a mentoring committee.
Mm.
So kind of like a committee you would have in graduate school, but like as a postdoc. So, you know, like things were happening. It was a lot of bumping heads in my first lab. And I talked to the other people on the committee and they were like, you know, you don't have to stay in that lab. And I was like, oh, like that's an option. Okay.
Yeah.
So like, and it was really like, I needed to just like ask for help. Like that's one thing that I always struggle with is just being like, okay, you know, you're not happy. Like you crying on the way to lab and back. Like, you know, to ask someone for help. So like, that's what I did. And ended up being able to join Aaron's lab after I took a couple weeks off. And then I joined Aaron Calipari's lab, which she looked at like sex differences and dopamine release. And I was like, that's my thing. And I started up my alley. So.
Yeah, that's amazing. So what was it like? So you were at now a new PI's lab, right? She just started her lab when you joined?
Started maybe like 3 or 4 months before I joined her lab. So like very new. But you know, she's awesome. Like she's a go-getter and she's like, we got things to do. So we on the move. And you know, like I was at that point like trying to prove myself, like, do I really want to do this? So it kind of like it worked out. I learned voltammetry, which is technically really similar to electrophysiology. So that like that helped as well. And I was able to get on like the first paper that the lab published. So it kind of just like, it really started rolling. There was some burnout in that time period too. Like I was tired. I also, if you're familiar with Nashville, like Nashville is just like a huge city. So I lived further away. Mm. And so it would take me a long time to get to lab, like maybe an hour or whatever. Mm. But like a 20-mile difference, like would take like an hour, sometimes more. So like I was going to lab like super early to try and like beat the traffic. And also like Aaron had a large lab too. And everybody was cool. And I like to talk. So I was like trying to talk to everybody and not really getting a lot of work done too. So I would have to come in like super early just to get some work done. Yeah. And then like leave. And I'm like, okay, I'm putting in my time. I've done my experiments. So just, and also try to beat the traffic back too. So there's a lot of burnout in that time, but then the pandemic happened and that like immediately stopped.
So
it was kind of a weird time, but.
I know. I talked to a few people that were like, and kind of like maybe your same cohort of saying like, you know, it's really weird. I was definitely like approaching or experiencing burnout. And then the pandemic happened. And it was like, that was like a one silver lining. It was like, I had to stop. And it was so confusing to be like, oh, I was trying to heal my burnout in those periods.
Yeah. So it was like, you know, it was a tough time, you know, like for the world or whatever, but like at the same time, I did kind of learn to prioritize myself and like, you know, then there was the time where like you could only have a certain percentage of people in the lab. So like the times that I did come in, it was like, okay, I'm going to get this done and like get out because like, you know, I have to. So that was kind of a good time too when I got to really like recognize that I do work well at home. Like I, you know, I can work remotely, you know, I'm okay with that too. Like, so, and it helped me learn like how I mentor people going forward. Like everyone has a different style. Like some people work well in labs, some people work well at home. Like, you know, you got to be a little more flexible in how you mentor people because it's different.
No, I think that's a great takeaway. Definitely. It's like, you know, remote work is valued so much more now and seen as like sometimes a necessity. I think it's a good lesson out of the many lessons that we can think of from the pandemic. So in your postdoc at Vanderbilt now in Erin Calipari's lab, you're beginning to look at sex differences and dopamine dynamics in that. So what was kind of like one of your big story as you're kind of developing or kind of your main interest in Erin's lab?
Yeah, so that was kind of like it happened like by mistake type thing. So I was like learning voltammetry and like how Erin taught me, like I just put a whole bunch of drugs on a slice and like saw what happened, right? But this is a sex differences lab. So, you know, we're using male and female tissue. And so like one of the drugs I put on was DHBETA-E. It's a nicotinic receptor antagonist. And so like when I use female slices in the nucleus accumbens, I put the drug on and I was literally like not seeing the same thing that I would see with the male slice. And I did this experiment so many times. like this, if this is something like you need to be really, really and even Erin was like, okay, like, you know, do it again because like we really need to be like sure with this. So so I put it on, I was seeing like something different. And then I kind of like just really went with that story and like, okay, there's some differences in how dopamine is regulated, like through nicotinic receptors between males and females, and just kind of like went with that story. And that's what I wrote my K99 on. And I submitted that like in February of 2020. and then like the pandemic happened. So it was a very weird time. And I got the notice award like the next year, so 2021. Mm. And then it just like, you know, took off from there.
That's amazing.
That's what my K99 is based on. And that's what my lab is based on, is like looking at sex differences in the regulation of dopamine release and how that affects like release and behavior. So reward learning. Yeah.
Cool. Were you always interested in also then the cholinergic system, or how did you kind of go about looking at the cholinergic system? And is that where your focus is then also then for your lab at this stage?
Not necessarily like interested in the cholinergic system, but because nicotinic receptors can be activated by acetylcholine, like that's kind of how I got like into that. But I'm more so just been really, I like, this is really nerdy, but I like neurotransmitters and like neuromodulators. I think they're interesting. Like just the release of dopamine and GABA and glutamate and, you know, serotonin, like how it can just change behavior, I think is interesting. So that's kind of really the focus. And then the sex differences thing is like, my interest is like in drugs that are on the market are mainly tested on males. Mm-hmm. And my research is showing like that could be completely different. Like you may see something similar behavioral-wise, but the mechanism may be different in how these drugs could be, you know, changing transmission or, you know, behavior. So just kind of.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. That's super important. I think we're like in a new age of establishing the importance of sex differences. And I think your work is definitely like one of those prominent works of showing like, look how different this is. We can't make these assumptions.
Right. Yeah. So that's kind of how that came about. So
Cool. And so then you returned back to UAB. And so how was that kind of decision-making process happening? Like, how did you end up deciding you wanted to return to UAB? And how has it been returning as a PI now? And what has that kind of shift been like too?
Oh, it's been crazy. I'm a Southerner, I was born in Arkansas, grew up in Tennessee and Mississippi, like went to school in Mississippi, and Alabama, most of my family is down here. So I wanted to stay in the South. But when I got my K-99 and got on the job market and I didn't know how interviews were going to go. Like, I got a lot of interviews and they were really all over the country. But at the end of the day, UAB gave me the best offer. That's really what it is. And I was familiar with the institution in the area. Mm-hmm. So it helped. But it wasn't the most money, but when you think about all the things that go into it, research money or, teaching and all kinds of things, UAB kind of gave me the best offer. So I went with what I know. And a lot of the professors that were at UAB when I was a graduate student were still here, and they were all supportive, still supportive of, getting me to come back and being super helpful. Still to this day, people email, you need anything? You good? Mm-hmm. I've been waiting months for my equipment to come, and it literally just came last week. But in the meantime, a lot of people have been you need to come to my lab and do an experiment or something. Let me know. Everyone is really supportive and helpful. So it's been cool.
That's great. A supportive environment is everything.
Yes, because starting a lab is no joke.
Yeah.
It's just there's so many things. There are so many things.
I know. I've seen stuff of just even I thought I'd ordered this item and it was really this totally other item. What do I do with this now? And just those small things where you learn, you're just I do that at my house. I can't not just do that, in my lab. Dang it.
And these are expensive items. I ordered two centrifuges for no reason. I didn't know I did that until they came. I was great. Anyway, so yeah, that was a thing. And getting my animal protocol approved was it's a lot. But I remind myself I signed up for this. I enjoy it at the end of the day. I like doing experiments, and I like mentoring. So
no, I think that's great. You kind of mentioned mentoring. I guess I know that since you've been a part of a lot of these kind of mentoring programs and everything, and you've also been co-authored and authored in a lot of these papers that are related to mentoring, I guess. Do you feel there's certain kind of key aspects or advice that you have for people about either finding a mentor or being a mentor as well?
Yeah. As far as being a mentor, just remember everyone is different and we can't mentor everyone the same. We just can't. Some people want you more hands-on and some people want you to leave them alone. Some people may want you to be hands-on and then leave them alone. You got to be able to go with the flow, which is kind of how my life is gone, but it's fine.
It's good. You're flexible. I think you adapt to a situation very well.
You got to, and your mentoring relationship is I think your most important relationship in grad school and your postdoc. If you don't get along with your mentor or there's something mentor wise, it's not going to end well. Especially in your postdoc, your postdoc mentor is going to be writing letters for you until the end of time. So that has to be a good relationship. And I mean, your grad school mentor does too. They get you through the PhD process. So I honestly think the choosing the right mentor is more important than the research. You got to like the research to keep doing it, but you also got to make sure that the mentor-mentee relationship is intact. It's important.
Yeah, no, I think that's very well said. We usually end these interviews by asking what you like to do outside of science or outside of at least the lab, what you kind of do to relax.
Oh, to relax? Well, I just bought a house in 2023. So like what I'm doing now to relax is like fix up my house, like do things. So that's fun. I used to knit. And I want to get back to that. We used to have me and some of my grad school classmates. We had like a knit and complain party, but we didn't call it complain. It's like a word that rhymes with knit.
That's funny.
So I want to get back to knitting. But I mean, like, you know, I'm Netflix. I love a good reality show. Like,
oh, me too.
Married to Medicine and Real Housewives of Potomac this morning.
Yeah. You know,
I'm like, anything reality, like, I'm in there. Like,
me too.
Yeah. Cool. Beverly Hills is one of my favorite now. Like, and I didn't really watch that, but now I'm like, the girls are giving.
I know. It's good this season. I agree.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for doing this interview with me. It was wonderful to hear your story.
Thank you for having me.
And so with that, I'll say goodbye to everyone at Stories of Wynn.